Hi, everybody. I'm Richard, and I'm an alcoholic. Lisa, wave if you can hear me. Okay. Okay. Thank you. I'm not a techno genius, so I'm always curious of things coming across, right? Anyway, thanks for the invitation to be here. It looks as an Al-Anon meeting that most of the people here are Al-Anons, although some of you probably go elsewhere as well. And I know a guy that I sponsor in AA is at this meeting, and he's up in Oregon today, but I think he joined us. So, and then we got this guy down here, Warren, bottom right. This New Zealand. Man, you came a long way for this meeting. I want to forewarn you a little bit. If you see me wince, don't worry. If you see me fall over and die, worry. I've been I've I, when I was 19, I was in an accident. A car that I was riding in went into a guardrail head on at 70, and my lower back got pretty ripped up. And years later, I flew out of a van that was going 70 miles an hour. And years later, I went over the handlebars of a motorcycle at about 80, and on and on and on. And so I come by my back pain honestly. There's no faking this one. And I've lived with this back pain for 50 years. And this, for the first time, about 10 days ago, it started to focus right down my leg with this sciatica issue. And it just kind of disabled me off and on for the last 10 days. And I told Lisa the other day, I was in front of a pharmacy. I was going in to get some a pain blocker. And so anyway, if you see me wince a little bit, it's just the pain racing down my leg. But when I say I'm going to do something around here, I do it, damn it. We used to have a guy in our area named Bill Honeycutt. And Bill Honeycutt used to say, if you're on your way to do some service in AA, like doing a panel or something, the only excuse for not showing up is if you die. And if you're going to die on your way there, you better contact somebody and get your panel covered. And that's kind of been my attitude about service in AA ever since, you know. Anyway, I'm in Long Beach, California right now. This is where I was actually raised. And years later, I was escorted out of Long Beach by the LA County Sheriff's. But I was actually told never to come back in this county again. And obviously, I'm here again. I have a little business for a long, long, long time now. So I guess they've quit looking for me and I get to stay. And I think what I'm going to do with my story tonight, I have give you kind of an abbreviated version of it. And that's a new one. Did y'all hear that one, or was that me?
We heard it. It
remember,
wasn't
I was a teenager in the '60s, so anything's liable to happen there. Anyway, I'll just tell you that I started to drink alcohol when I was 13. By 16, I'd become a daily drinker to the point of being drunk every day from 16 on. Until I finally tried to start to stop many, many years later. At 16, I had a drunk driving and a hit and run. 17, I was thrown in jail, contempt of court. 18, I had another drunk driving. I'm a real alcoholic. I won't give you any more details than that. Just know that that I'm not that we take this with. Anyway, I'm the real. Yeah, I'm an alcoholic. I made it through my life okay till I was about 29, and then that's when I was asked to leave this area. I was evicted and followed out of the county of Los Angeles and told never to return. But anyway, my story toward the end there, I'm gonna sort of skip along to the day I got sober, or the day before I got sober. About 4 months before this particular day, I was taken to an emergency room because I'd come to and I was in real bad shape. And some good Samaritan had scooped me up and taken me to an emergency room and left me. And I'd learned by then that if your condition looked life-threatening, all hospitals have to treat you. They don't have to keep you, but they have to patch you up. And it was kind of, I learned it was sort of like a patch and release program. They patch you up and send you on your way. Unless it's a county hospital, then they keep you to use as a teaching tool for their students, you know. But this time, this guy patched me up. He asked me how I got so banged up. I said I didn't remember because I was drunk the night before. He says, "Well, they just drew some blood and they did some work." And he says, "Well, the deal is that you have three cracked ribs and a concussion, and we're going to have to stitch this eye back up into place. It's been, he says, it looks like you were either beat up by a gang or hit by a moving car. I can't tell which. And I said, you know, I feel like I was beat up by a gang and then thrown in front of a moving car. That's what I feel like, you know. And anyway, he says, but he's, after he told me that, he says, we're going to patch you up and then you have to go. And before you go, I want you to know one thing. He says, your ribs and your concussion will heal on their own, but your insides won't heal. He says, with your blood, and he says, your organs are starting to give out. And if you keep drinking the way you've been drinking to get your insides in this condition, and his words were, before 6 months occur, you will expire. And I just visualized this parking meter, you know, going bang and, you know, gigs up. And when he told me that, I not only believed him, I accepted it. I accepted death by the disease alcoholism because I didn't know anybody. I didn't know people could stay stopped, you know. I had tried AA many, many times during the previous years, and I couldn't stay sober with it. By this time, this 4 month period after he had told me that, I'd already been in detox 16 times, and I had spent the last 4 years without housing. I guess these days you can pitch a tent wherever you want to. Back then it wasn't so easy. You had to really work at being homeless, you know. And so anyway, it was just a difficult, horrible, painful, disgusting life, and I despised everything I'd become. And I got to a day about 4 months into that process where I just didn't want to try anymore, you know, after all those attempts at getting sober and hundreds of AA meetings. My problem with AA meetings was by the time I got to them, I was already drunk. And I don't have any problem with people coming to meetings drunk. My problem was there was so much alcohol between me and the message, it couldn't penetrate. And so hundreds of meetings, 16 detoxes, 2 county programs, and I'm down to my last 2 months of life, according to this doctor. And I think he was pretty accurate, because when you're dying, you know it. You know, your things quit working. And I just thought, I just can't do this anymore. I quit. And I was drunk this one morning, and as usual. And I thought, I got 2 months to live, and I can't do the time. So my solution to the disease alcoholism was to take out a Swiss Army knife that I always carried, and I put it down under the vein in my left arm, and I pulled forward, and I laid down to die. Because alcohol won, you know. In our big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, they have a statement that's read over and over again, and it talks about the disease being cunning, baffling, and powerful. And I always think that's the biggest understatement in the big book, because not only will an alcoholic put everything of value on the bar, but they'll eventually put their life itself on the bar. And that's where I was that day. And I sliced myself open and lay down to die. And obviously somebody found me and scooped me up, rushed me to another emergency room. They stitched me up. The doctor, after he had me stitched up, he says, you have to leave now because we don't treat your kind in this hospital. And it was a nice place, and they wanted me in a county hospital, I'm sure. And I walked out of there. I was furious, you know, I was furious that they found me. And, you know, I got drunker that night. And the next day I got up and I was really mad. You know, I thought, Jesus, I can't even get dead right. I can't do anything. You know, I'm done. I just want to be off this planet. And I got a bottle, and which is what I did every morning. And I got about a fifth of vodka inside me, and something began to happen. And I don't know, you could call it a moment of clarity, or you could call it a moment of grace. You can call it whatever you want. But all of a sudden, my thinking began to change. And you know, in AA, you know, you just showed an Al-Anon coin. Well, the AA coins have the triangle, which stands for Unity, Service, and Recovery. But I was kind of building my own triangle that day. And my left arm of my triangle was all about acceptance. You know, it was you know, absolutely 100% accepting the fatal nature of my disease. 100%. No more arguing, no more debating, no more questioning. I was going to die from alcoholism if I didn't stop drinking. And it was 100% acceptance. Now, I'd proved it to myself that if the disease didn't take me out, my own self would take me out, you know? The other thing that happened to me as that day went on is I thought, well, if I really, really want to do this living thing, I'm going to have to be sober. And those AA people that came in and talked on panels in all the detoxes I was in, they seemed to have the answer if I really give myself to them and to their program. And so that second leg, my triangle, was of surrender, to absolute 100% surrender. If you're in AA and you're sober longer than me and you tell me to do something, I'm going to do it. You know, I'm going to try and learn from the people that know what's going on around here. So I had these two legs of this triangle, this acceptance and this surrender, And I'm, you know, and I'm drunk during this day, by the way. I'm not well at all, but I'm having some kind of awarenesses. Sort of, I came to know them better after the fact. But anyway, I called AA that day, and they took me out to another detox. And I, by the time I got there, I knew I didn't need to be there. I knew I just needed to stop drinking. And I knew what social model detoxes are all about is, you know, here's your bed, here's your bucket. We'll check on you in a few days. I knew the drill, and I knew I could do that anywhere. And I got a ride back down to where I knew somebody lived. I knew a girl that lived in Seal Beach, who had been, I had been drunk with a little bit for a while. And I had heard that she had sobered up, and I thought, well, let's just go see if I can crash out at her house tonight, maybe shake this thing out over the next few days rather than go to the detox. But I bought a bunch of booze with me because I figured if this is going to be my last day drinking, it might as well be a doozy, you know, and this is how alcoholics think, people, you know. So I get another fifth of vodka and a 12-pack of beer. I knock on her door. I ask her if I can come in and crash on her couch. Because I wanted to sober up. I have no idea why she even let me in, or that she whether or not she believed me, but she put up with it. And she said, go ahead. She says, I'm already going to bed, so you can have the couch. And I sat on her couch, and I drank all of that booze. And as I was drinking all that booze, way down deep inside of me, I kept thinking, you know, as much as I'm going to be sick tomorrow, as much as I hate what I'm doing, this is the last time I'm ever going to have to do this. And, late that night, midnight maybe that night, I called a member of AA, and it's a guy that I had heard speak at an AA meeting probably 2 years before that. He'd given me his phone number after the meeting. I had never called him once, but he had seen me stagger in and out of some meetings, so he knew who I was. And I called him at midnight. For, you know, for some reason, he answered the phone. I don't know why. It's unusual. A lot of times people don't answer the phone late, but he answered the phone. The other unusual thing is that he's talked to me as drunk as I was. Remember, I'm on the end of the second drunk of the day. I'm a mess, and I'm babbling and I'm crying and I'm just a disaster. And he took time in the middle of the night with his wife sleeping right next to him. He took an hour in the middle of the night to talk to me. And it was during that time that I had the third leg of my triangle, which is the base of the other two. And that was hope. I finally had some hope, you know, because this man said he would help me. He said he would take me to meetings. I don't know what else he was going to do, but he offered that kind of help. And he said, stay where you are. He knew whose house I was at. And he says, I'll come there tomorrow after work and I'll take you to an AA meeting. I said, all right. You know, and when I passed out on that couch at that lady's house, I passed out with some hope. And I woke up in the morning and I didn't pick up a drink. And I get sick if I don't drink, real sick. But I didn't pick up a drink. And it's the first morning I hadn't picked up a drink outside of a facility in probably 8 or 9 years. And I stayed on that couch sick all day. And then finally that evening he called over there. And I thought he was going to tell me what time he was going to come and get me, because he told me he would take me to a meeting. I remembered that. And instead of telling me that, he just talked to me. And he talked to me like an old timer should talk to a newcomer. You know, he talked to me with love and with compassion. He talked to me with understanding. He didn't talk down to me. He talked to me. We talked for an hour, a full hour. And finally I said, are we going to go to one of those meetings or not? Because I was so sick, I didn't even know if I could go. And he told me that he couldn't go after all. And he couldn't take me. And I asked him why. I was kind of disappointed. Why not, Ted? And he told me that his father had died that day. His father lived in Fort Wayne, Indiana. And he was going to catch a plane that night and fly to Fort Wayne and help his mother make the arrangements to bury his father. And on that day, when he's supposed to be getting his airplane tickets and driving to LAX and flying to Indiana, he took an hour out of that night to let a helpless, hopeless alcoholic know that he meant. And I, of course, never forgot that. And I've never drank since that day. And that was 37 and a half years ago. So it's incredible what can happen, you know, with the power of our programs and with love and with commitment and to service, you know. And that man gave me all of that in one night. Anyway, he remained my sponsor. He became my sponsor and remained my sponsor for 12 years. And then he moved out of state and I got a different sponsor. But I'll just give you a little follow-up on that story. When I was 10 years sober, so I'd gotten a good job, and I had working for a consulting company, and I had to make a trip to Chicago. And I always thought if I could ever get near, I became an AA history nut when I was about 2 years sober, and I've done that for 35 years. I study our history, and I always thought if I could ever get near Akron, Ohio, where it all started, I would want to go there. And when I was planning this trip to Chicago, I looked on a map of the country from Chicago to Akron. It's only about an inch and a quarter about there. I thought this would be great. I'll go to Chicago, take care of this business, and drive over to Akron. Turned out the following week it was going to be Founders Day when I have a big convention in Akron. Told my sponsor what I was going to do. And, you know, during that same week, he was going to be flying into Fort Wayne, Indiana, because his mother was still alive, but she was in a hospital. And he hadn't seen her in 10 years. And he says, I've only talked to her twice in the last 10 years. They just never, ever communicated. So he said, when you're driving from Chicago to Akron, why don't you drop down to Fort Wayne and meet up with me, and we'll go to an AA meeting together. And I thought, what a great idea, you know. So that was the plan. And then just before I was going to leave, he called me. He told me he couldn't go. He says, I'm not going to be able to go for about a month. They had business problems here. So he says, you might as well just drive straight to Akron. And for some reason, I said, I don't think so, Ted. I said, I think I want to go to Fort Wayne, Indiana, maybe say hi to your mom. Now, I don't know this lady, and she doesn't know me, and Ted barely knows her. He's talked to her twice in 10 years. And he thought it was a very odd request. But he gave me her address at the hospital she was in, and her full name, and I flew to Chicago, took care of the business, and then I drove down to Fort Wayne, Indiana, and I found her hospital, went up to her room, and she was a little old, thin, last legs kind of lady. She was, and anyway, I walked in her room, and she's in a bed all by herself in this room, and I walked up alongside of her bed, and I said, you know, my name is Richard, and I'm a friend of your son Ted's from Southern California. Do you mind if I sit down for a minute and talk with you? And she said, happy to have a visitor. And she said, no, please pull up a chair. And I did. And I reached out and I held her hand. And I spent the next 4 hours telling her about her son, about the kind of man he had become, and about the fact that the day her husband had died, her son had given me my life. And she didn't know about this. She thought he was still an old con man, drunken knucklehead, you know, from the past. They didn't know each other well. And she just wouldn't let go of my hand. We spoke for a few hours, and finally she reaches over and she picked up a telephone. She calls this number and she hands me the phone and she says, this is my sister. Would you tell her what you just told me? I want to make sure somebody else in my family know that my son Ted turned out okay. And so I talked to her sister for some time. She was even older. Anyway, they finally threw me out of the hospital under threat of arrest because they kept coming in saying visiting hours are over, you know, and she wouldn't let go of my hand, so I stayed. Anyway, the next day I drove up to Akron, Ohio, and did Founders Day, and then I flew home after that. And about 3 weeks later, I got a call from my sponsor, called me, and he said, I just want to let you know my mom passed away yesterday. And I said, oh, I'm sorry to hear that. She's a lovely lady, you know. I said, did you get back to see her before she died? And he says, no. I didn't have that chance. And he says, but I want you to know one thing. And that's that, you know, my mom and I talked twice in 10 years until you two had your little visit. And he said, then we talked on the phone every day until the day she died. And he was grateful for that. And she was grateful for that. And they got to complete a circle, you know, and it was a circle for me too, you know, 10 years before, when just before his dad, or the day his dad died, he came in my life. 10 years later, I kind of got to pinch it for him in a small way. And a circle was completed for me. And this whole circle business is like fundamental to my life these days. And it has been since the beginning. I keep seeing that if we live our lives according to the principles we learn as a result of working the 12 steps, and these things occur, you know, that things heal, things get better, you know. Sometimes it's our circles that get completed, and sometimes we get to play a part in the circle of somebody else, right? And I'll give you just a story about that, and it'll probably be about as much time as I have. I'm a long storyteller. So when I was about 5 years sober, I was answering the phones for our local central office at nighttime. It was a commitment you take once a month. And when somebody calls the central office after hours, the call automatically patches through to your home and you answer the phone at home, Alcoholics Anonymous, like you're the real deal. And really you're a guy in his PJs, but they don't know it. They called AA and you answered the phone. So I used to take those calls once a month for, I don't know, a few years. And it was fun because the later the night got, the more amusing the calls got. A call, you know, a call like "Where's the meeting at 6 o'clock?" sounded very different to somebody calling at 11 p.m. that's so drunk you can't. Anyway, so this one night I'm taking the calls, and maybe about 6 o'clock I get a call from a guy, and this guy is hammered drunk, and he's calling AA for help, you know, but he is so drunk and he sounds so desperate, you know. And I talked to him for a long, long time, and as he talked to me, he began to sound more and more to me like he felt the way I felt the day I put that knife in my arm. That's what I got from him, you know, in coming through his drunken. Anyway, I talked to him for a long time. I talked to him for about an hour. And I want to, you know, just, this is more of an Al-Anon meeting, so I don't know if I should say it, but a lot of times people say, don't talk to alcoholics. Don't waste your time talking to them when they're drunk. And I vehemently disagree with that statement, because when I talked to Ted that night, I was as drunk as I could possibly be, and I got the hope from him. And when this guy called, he's totally drunk, and I'll tell you the rest of the story. So anyway, I disagree with that statement, and you hear it in AA rooms all the time. Oh, don't waste your time when you're drunk. I make them quiet down when they say that kind of thing. They're welcome in my rooms, that's all I can tell you. Anyway, so the guy's really drunk, and I'm talking to him, and you know, he's explaining to me all of his woes, and we all have woes, and we come in, and we're new, but he's desperate, he's despondent, you know, he's down there. And you know, I wind up telling him, you know, I've been very much like you are, and I'm not like that anymore. You see, I'm alive today because I go to AA and I'm involved in AA. That's the only reason why I'm alive today. You know, otherwise I'd have been a dead man a long, long time ago. So AA basically gave me my life, and it's available to you too, you know. And I said, there's a meeting. He told me where he was. And I said, there's a meeting right close to where you are, and I can send somebody out there, pick you up, take you to the meeting. And he says, no. I think he just didn't want some stranger to show up at his door. I said, well, if you don't want me to send somebody out there, I said, maybe you can find a neighbor or a relative. Somebody else might take you over there, but you really need to go, because alcohol is going to kill you otherwise, you know, one way or another, it's going to take you down. And then anyway, we talked for a long time, during which time I told him I loved him. I told him it mattered to me whether he lived or died. I told him, you know, I told him all the stuff we tell a new person, drunk or not. And then we finally said our goodbyes. And then about 10 o'clock that same night, I get a call, and it's the same guy. And he says, hey, well, I'll let you know, I went to that meeting. After all, my neighbor took me, and he sat there in the meeting with me. And he said, maybe there's some hope after all. And I said, yeah, there is, you know. And I said, I'm glad you went to the meeting. I hope you got something out of it. Obviously, you did, or you wouldn't have called back. Because now he's three hours without a drink. You know, he's a little more lucid. So I talked to him for a long time that night, longer than we're supposed to. We're supposed to keep our conversations short to keep the lines open, you know. I think this was before call waiting. Anyway, we talked for a long, long time, and I told him my story, and I listened to his story. And then before we got off the phone, I told him about more meetings to go to. I said, based on where you live, here's some other meetings to go to that are good meetings that I've been to. And I told him about one of mine in particular that was one of my favorite meetings. And we talked for a long, long time, and we finally said our goodbyes. And 3 weeks later, I'm showing up at that favorite meeting. It's in Seal Beach, and it's a Monday night discussion group. And I get to the meeting really late because I'm coming from a panel 35 miles away. And I just showed up at the meeting, like 5 minutes left in the meeting. I don't even remember why I showed up with so little time left, but I did. And I walk in the room, and everybody sits in a big circle. And I saw only one empty seat. It was actually a piano bench. I went over and I sat on that piano bench, and the leader, says, well, we got, he looked at his watch, and he says, well, we got time for one more person to share. How about the newcomer who's sitting next to Richard? So whoever was sitting next to me had introduced himself as a newcomer. I've never seen him before. Anyway, he says, I'll just use the name Drew, because that's his name. He goes, my name is Drew, and I'm an alcoholic. And 3 weeks ago, I called Alcoholics Anonymous at night, and I knew nobody would answer the phone. But somebody did answer the phone. And when the person who answered the phone stopped talking for a minute, and I had to respond to him, I had to pull the barrel of a .45 out of my mouth before I could answer his question. So I was ready to pull the trigger and have this whole thing over with. And he said, I put the gun down next to me, and I talked to the guy for an hour. And I went to a meeting that night, and I've been coming to meetings ever since, and I haven't had a drink for 3 weeks, and I think this thing might work. And I looked at the guy, and I thought, I know this guy. Never met him before, but I sure know him. And then the meeting ended, and I introduced myself to him, and we kind of discussed that night. And I said, well, why didn't you tell me about the gun? And he says, well, does the term 5150 mean anything to you? And I don't know if you all know what that means, but that's a 72-hour hold, so that you're not going to kill yourself or somebody else. I said, yes, it means something to me. I know it well. Anyway, so we wound up talking, and he wound up coming back to that meeting every week and staying sober, you know, and he got married. Then he started, then they moved. And then every year after that, they would come to the meeting to celebrate his birthday. And then after 3 years, they would come down and celebrate the birthday with, he and her mother, who knew this story and wouldn't let go of me when she saw me. And then they started coming down with the first kid and the second kid. And so anyway, every year we saw Drew as he celebrated his birthdays as the years went by, and he stayed sober and he stayed sober. And then about 24 years ago, I decided to open the store. And so all my friends came in to help because I don't know how to do anything. Like their job is to keep me away from power equipment. No power saws, no nothing. I'm not good at that stuff. And they are, you know, I have friends and people I sponsor who are in the trades and they really know what they're doing. They were all coming in whenever they could to help out to get this place ready because it was a mess when I took it over, a different kind of company. And so we're all in there working one day, trying to get it ready. And in walks Drew. And I hadn't seen Drew since his last birthday, you know. He comes walking in the store, and I thought, well, he must have got the word that I'm looking for cheap labor or free help, whatever I can get. But when he came walking in the store, you know, there was nothing here. It was empty. It was a shell, and we were just cleaning it up, getting it painted and electrical and plumbing and stuff like that. But when he came in, he started looking around the store, and he just started laughing. He's laughing out loud, like, oh, ha, ha, like, what a mess this is. That's what I'm getting out of it. And he's laughing, and I'm looking at him, and he's laughing. Everybody else is working, and he's laughing. And finally, I said, Drew, it's going to clean up. It's going to be okay. You know, shouldn't be that laughable. And he says, well, that's not what I'm laughing about. And I said, well, what's so funny then? And he says, well, do you know what this used to be? I said, yeah, the last tenants in this unit, it was a dog and cat grooming place. That's why it's such a mess. You know, it's just a mess. I said, is that what's so funny? He says, no, I don't think so. He says, do you know what it was before that? And I'd asked my landlord what tenants had been in here to get a little history on the place. And my landlord had told me that an architectural firm had been in this unit and the one next door. And I said, yeah, an architectural firm. Why? I said, is that funny to you? He says, well, as a matter of fact, it is. He says, you guys never knew this about me because I never told anybody. But I used to work as an architect for a living, and I used to work here, the same exact spot. And he looks up and he points at some these light fixtures. He says, I designed those light fixtures. And he looks where the certain window is. He goes, I designed that window. He says, I worked here for years as an architect. He was a fully licensed architect. And he says, until they finally fired me for being a drunk and getting in trouble with my drinking. And he says, and I haven't walked back to this building since there. And I'm walking in here because I heard you needed a little help. And I wasn't sure. I couldn't even remember the exact address. And it's where I used to work. You know, I don't know who writes this stuff. I don't know who the script writer is in this life that we have, you know, but it's pretty phenomenal. And, you know, the first story I told you about Ted and me completing a full circle, right? Well, this is one where I was a little part of Drew full circle, you know. He went from working here to getting fired from here to coming back here decades later, and it's a whole, anyway. And so that was one of his full. And so that's what I find around here. Again, if we're, you know, living our lives, this is my mantra, according to the principles we learn as a result of working the 12 steps of our program, then these things take place. And I, in my own life, I see them all the time. You kind of have to, you know, sometimes they're in your face, but sometimes you just have to be observant. There they are again. There they are again. And I've talked in meetings around the country hundreds and hundreds of times, and oftentimes you know, half a dozen people will pin me down and want to tell me all their full circle stories. They're out there and they're happening. And I always leave with this one remark about full circles. You know, in geometry, y'all remember geometry. Well, a circle looks like this. It has a starting point. You go around and you come down and the circle's complete where you started. In geometry, that's what a full circle looks like. In our lives, again, if we're doing what we're supposed to be doing, I've noticed that my full circles start here and go around. And when they come back, I'm looking at my screen trying to figure out what you see, but they finish at a higher plane. They don't finish down here. They finish here. And life goes on. There's another full circle and we wind up here. You know what I mean? There's this continuum up from left to right. And what I've noticed is, I don't know about the majority, maybe most of the really significant moments in my recovery have had to do with where those intersections take place along that chart, where those circles come anyway. It's where I can see anyway, I can see spiritual growth and growth within myself and growth around me too. And with that, I'm going to just tell you, I'm a really happy member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've also done off and on. I'm a periodic Al-Anon, but I'm devoted to AA, and I do a lot of things also with Al-Anon too, and with some of the other programs as well. So anyway, I love y'all. I'm glad you were gracious enough to have me up north. I want to thank Lisa for finagling me up here somehow or another. And I think I got through this without wincing. I don't think I winced once, which means, you know, it's this power of love, and it's helping to get rid of the sciatica problem and the fact that I haven't stood up. Anyway, thank you all very much. Appreciate being here.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you.
Beautiful share, Richard.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Beautiful share.